Hey, I'm Bob Runkel, and for as long as I can remember, I've loved pop culture. Despite the challenges I've faced in my life, pop culture has always been there for me. I love talking to people and being a platform for others to share their thoughts, stories. Because if there's one thing I never get tired of, it's seeing driven, talented, and inspiring individuals follow their dreams, no matter what obstacles are in their way. And I know a thing or two about that. Welcome to the DJ Bob Show. I'm DJ Bob. Roll it. Welcome to a very important to me episode of the DJ Bob Show. Here's a little bit of a story time to preface what I mean. In 2010, when I started this show, I was 15 years old, not knowing really what this was going to be. But I aimed high, and I made a list of people that I wanted to potentially interview on this podcast. Back then it was a live stream. And number one on that list was none other than author, illustrator, and television creator Mark Brown. He is best known for creating the Arthur book series and being a huge part of the Arthur television series. And I'm so happy to say that after nearly 14 years, he's here. And we cover a lot. And it's just a real conversation. At the end of the interview, after we wrapped, he complimented me. And he said, "You know what I loved about this interview? It was real." And coming from one of my heroes, that means a lot. And also, the day that you're hearing this is the day before my 29th birthday. So there's no better birthday gift I would want to share with you than my conversation with Mark Brown. Bucket list item, check. Enjoy. We're finally here.
Yeah, I know.
Thank you so much for taking the time to do this. I know.
Oh, I've been looking forward to it. It's great that we could do it, find the time to do it.
So what is kind of the schedule on hop? What's going on with the new show?
We're frantically working to get all the last parts of shows in order. You know, I've been a lot more involved in the creative process of hop than I was in Arthur even.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty involved with Arthur. But to be a part of recording sessions where through Zoom, I'm watching the various actors who are playing the characters. And, you know, I see them struggling with a line and or that doesn't sound quite right. And I can just rewrite the line right there and they'll record it the way it should be recorded. So that's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. Peter told me about the show when you guys
were
like starting to work on it.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've been having a really good time. I love working with Peter and Tolan. So it's been a lot of fun.
Let me roll off a few facts for you. You've sold over 85 million books worldwide. You've had 25 years of a popular television show. You've had many Emmy nominations and a few wins. Like, when you were telling that bedtime story, did you ever think it would be this?
Oh, I imagined it being much bigger. No, never in a million years did I imagine a second book about Arthur when the first one was published. And, you know, as far as children's television, I really didn't like it. The only thing I remember my kid watching was Fred Rogers, who, because of Arthur, became a friend. And he came to my studio in Hingham, Massachusetts, and we filmed one of his episodes there where Michael Yarmish was involved. And Fred's agenda for that meeting was to help kids demystify cartoons and understand that these characters that were moving around on the screen were voiced by real people. And, you know, how people came together to make those characters move on the screen. So that was a really fun day for me. And we became, you know, good friends. And shortly before his death, he sent me a television project that he thought we might collaborate on. And we just didn't have the time to make it happen.
And there's a story that you tell often, but I'd love you to tell it here, how he kind of reached into your soul and kind of knew about your grandmother. Would you mind sharing that story?
Fred had this ability to really go deeply into whomever he was talking with. And so we were filming this episode in my studio, and we had some time while everyone was setting things up. And you know, the first thing he said to me was, "Mark, tell me about your grandma, Thora." And first of all, I was surprised that he knew I had a grandma, Thora, and she was one of the characters in Arthur. But I don't know how he understood how important she was in my life, because my childhood was, you know, it had some rough spots to it. And she was the one person in my life who encouraged me to draw and use my imagination. She also was the only adult in my life who was putting $2 or $3 a week away in a bank account so I could go to college someday. Fred said, "She sounds an awful lot like my grandpa McFeely." He was like that too. He was that special person in my life who believed in me. And he said, "Mark, every child needs at least just one person in their life to believe in them, to make it as an adult." And that's stayed with me. And, you know, I've had the good fortune over time to visit a lot of schools around the country and talk to kids. I like kids. If I were a bumper sticker, it would say, "I like all kids and some adults." And, you know, I could see when I would visit these schools, sometimes they were, you know, in rough neighborhoods, and it was teachers in a lot of their lives who believed in them. And, you know, I felt so happy for the kids that they would have these special people, adults in their lives who saw that potential and encouraged it. I had a good art teacher who did the same thing for me. So I had those two special people in my corner while I was growing up.
And it's really kind of rewarding for them when you get to tell them thank you for what you've done. And because they don't realize when they're in the thick of it what they're doing for you. So that's always, like, a few years back, I interviewed my 9th grade history teacher, and she had no idea the impact that she had.
How lucky were you had a good history teacher? I didn't have a good history teacher, and now I love history.
I mean, it depends on the teacher, I guess.
Yeah, they're so important.
Speaking of history, I want to talk to you about progress in Arthur's world, in the sense, in 2005, there were 300 PBS stations that banned a postcard from Buckstar because that featured two gay moms.
Yeah.
And now, like 14 years later, you're doing a season opener with Mr. Rapper and getting married. Talk about progress.
Exactly. That's the word that comes to mind right away is progress. And, you know, we wanted to do a show about Arthur's teacher getting married. And the more we talked about it, we realized we had this wonderful opportunity to do something special for kids, to reflect real life. And you know, I think the thing that was most wonderful about that episode was the mail, the texts that I received, young adults who they were so excited that kids would be able to see that and feel, you know, a part of all of our lives that is reflected in the media, and it just doesn't happen often enough. And these young adults, you know, said, I wished I had had something like that when I was that age to see, and they were just really happy that it had happened.
And truthfully, you know, as a person with a disability, we don't hear ourselves hear ourselves represented in the proper way. So I kind of felt for that community, because there are so many strides in our media landscape now where these things can happen.
Yeah.
And will happen.
Well, I'm happy to know that, Bob, because what Hop is all about, characters that have, many of them have disabilities, and, you know, it never defines who they are or what they can accomplish with their lives. And it's also about the power of friendship and working together. And we work with this group called Respectability. Have you heard of them?
I've never heard of them, no.
They have been so good about keeping us on track. Every script they go over, and they, you know, want to make sure, we want them to make sure that we're not doing something that would, you know, give children a misleading impression about something in the story. It's been wonderful to work with them.
I'm excited to check it out, because you've never really been in the preschool space.
No, you know, and it was what I think it was being befriended by Fred and watching all the work that he had done for that age group over the years. And when Arthur was getting close to being finished, I wasn't finished. And I wanted a new project where I could maybe, you know, do something positive for children in this world of animation. As Carol Greenwald said, that was how she pulled me in to Arthur. She wanted to use the power of animation and television, two very seductive forces in children's lives, to make a difference. And our agenda was to get kids to read. And so, you know, there's always that subtle message in Arthur about using the library or using books to find out things or to help them solve some problem that they have.
It's, you know, I watched, you know, I'm a huge Arthur fan. I have been for as long as I can remember. And one of the things that struck me about watching the show as an adult is how evergreen it is. It never, there's never any dated references. And if there is, it's kind of a nod, a kind of a reference. And it's not, you don't see them like play, like every episode just works now. Every book works now. And I feel like that's what you set out to do, is make evergreen content that that can have a timestamp on it.
Maybe it's the subjects that we were dealing with that are evergreen. You know, they're all so human and so basic to all of us and our development and how we become a good citizen in the world. That's always what I wish kids would take away something from my books or the television show that will make a contribution in the world, where they will grow up to be good citizens. That's what we need.
Yeah, for sure. So how do you feel about Arthur and meme culture?
LeBron James, what did he start with the fist?
Yeah, it's his fault.
It's all his fault. No, I think it's great. I think maybe more letters from adults who grew up with Arthur now in fan mail than I do from kids. And that just, it moves me so much that these young adults have something in their life that was changed by an episode or a book. It's remarkable that we can use the media for positive forces.
And that's exactly what I try to do here, just create a safe space for that's audience great. Because ultimately it's adults creating this stuff for kids, and I want to create a more analytical view on the content that I grew up with. Because when you hear a kid show, some people get this weird depiction in their head of what it is. There's so much more to it.
Well, and I think part of the secret sauce that made Arthur work so well, we didn't do it intentionally, but there's always some underlying layer of adult humor that might go over most kids' heads, but it's there to draw adults in to watch the show with their kids. Because, you know, when you're reading a book with a child or watching a show with a child, it's more than that. You can ask them questions. What do you think about that? Would you, you know, was that something good? Or would you do that? It's an opportunity to share your values with a child who's sitting on your lap or sitting next to you. And, you know, that's what can be, I think, one of the most positive things about children's television or picture books.
I'm going to have to email this to you, but in first grade, my teacher, one of our projects was to write our very own Arthur book. Oh. And kind of play with the narrative and I made him into a radio DJ, which is funny because that's kind of what I do now.
It's some kids, it's there so early in their lives.
And I could tell you why that is, because when I was a kid, you know, being in a wheelchair, I couldn't really play outside. I couldn't really do what other kids did. So media and film and music and all and creativity, I always tell people that I'm so grateful that I have a disability, because I wouldn't have all this time to create and do. People could just sit there and be so sad about the predicament that they're dealt with. But I have bad days too, but I'm not like, oh, I'm doing this podcast just because I have a disability. I'm just stuck with it. No, it gave me more time to do what I'm doing now.
You're making me think of this quote from Hop. The place where all of these characters live is called Fair City. And Peter wrote this wonderful line early on when we were building this world. He said, "Welcome to Fair City, a place where there's nothing better than being just who we are together. And I think that really sums up what the show is all about.
One of the things I wanted to tell you is Arthur was so important to me because it was a show about kids being kids and kids dealing with real life issues, even if they're not as hard hitting like divorce or any of the special topics you covered. It could be something as simple as there being a new game on the internet and people being obsessed with it and headlights and all these things. So
yeah,
was there ever a topic that you or any of the writers brought on that was like, of course, why didn't we do this before?
Every year we would think, we've done it all. You know, all these 25 seasons, that's a lot of ideas, a lot of shows. But the way Arthur began was from my own personal life. I have this ability to go back into third grade. I can see my teacher, my classmates. I can see the halls. I can smell what it was like in the hallways. All of the characters in my third grade world became Arthur's world. And growing up with three younger sisters, I kind of combined them to make DW. And Francine was my one sister, Bonnie, who was just like Francine. She was very good at sports and she liked to talk a lot. She was very bossy. She became a wonderful kindergarten teacher. That kind of got carried over to Arthur when he moved into television. And, you know, we would have these, my favorite part of the show was these wonderful meetings we would have every year, brainstorming ideas for episodes. And we'd all come with our list. And I would bring sometimes the simplest coupling of words, like desk wars. And one of the writers would find an affinity with that.
Why do I think that was a Peter one, right?
I think it was Peter. And he also wrote one. I said one of the meetings, where do all our socks go in the laundry? And Peter wrote that great episode about the sock market and played with that. And so that's, or one of the... I don't know who it was, if it was Carol and her kids came home with head lice and that wonderful story about head lice, things that could be helpful to families that families were dealing with and to, you know, look at that and give kids and their caregivers a chance to talk about it.
And, you know, as well as dealing with stuff in your kid's life, you were dealing with things in cast members of the show's lives as well. I mean, for example, your Buster, Daniel Brochu, wanted to travel to Australia for, I think, a year or two. So yeah. You guys wrote him out of the... Well, you found a way to write him out and make him travel the world with his father. Like, that's such a cool...
Yeah. And then it kind of inspired Postcards from Buster.
Yeah. And Postcards from Buster was the catalyst of me wanting to pick up a video camera. So it all comes, yeah. It all comes full circle.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a wonderful project to mix animation and live action. I'm really sorry that the plug got pulled on that way too soon. And it was because of that one episode about Vermont and making cheese and making...
I love that episode. I just watched it this morning.
You did?
Yeah. I dug it up and I found it.
Wow. Yeah. And all of our funding got pulled from the Department of Education. We had a wonderful company that was going to build a series of textbooks around the curriculum.
That would have been great.
And I know. And so those things, because of the administration that was in charge at that time.
And like, you guys were gearing up to air episodes in like Egypt and Hawaii and all the...
Yeah.
You guys were going global with that. but a lot of people never got to see them. Yeah. And I feel like it was such an important show for me because, you know, you saw other kids' lives and you saw different ethnicities and different ways of living that I might not have otherwise seen.
Hmm.
I loved it, and I always felt like I talked to Danny about it, Danny Brochu, and he's like, it was the most fun show to work on because I never knew what I was getting into with each kid. Like, you never knew. He would watch, and he would be amazed and just keep watching and wouldn't do his lines. And it was such a unique show. It really was. And another fun thing I wanted to kind of jog your memory about was you guys have always been at the forefront of technology.
Hmm.
You've played around with computer games, but one of the big things that amazed me, and I wish I had it, but it was way too expensive, and you know what I'm talking about. The Actimake Arthur?
They were an incredible toy. I was against them. I felt they were too elitist. It was Bill Gates fell in love with Arthur, and he came up with this idea of having these Arthur and DW dolls that you would plug into your computer or your television set. And it would become interactive. They were phenomenal, but
the short of it was, it was a horror deal to set it up. You needed the dog, you needed the TV pack, and it adds up.
I couldn't understand them. You know, I understand how to. At the time when Arthur was beginning, I didn't own a computer, and. Was Broderbund, the company Broderbund, who had the idea of doing these interactive books where kids could make things move or interact with the story as it was happening. And I love the idea that they could touch a word on the screen and hear the definition or hear how it was pronounced. And I thought, you know, this is really great for all kids, but especially reluctant readers. So I didn't have a computer, and they were trying to explain to me how this worked. And so they were out in California. I was in Massachusetts, and they came to my studio with a computer. They gave me a computer, showed me how to use it. And that was my introduction to the computer, and I've never looked back.
Now we're here talking.
Yeah, here we are.
Yeah, It's so crazy because every moment in my life has an Arthur moment connected to it. Like, you know, when I think of going to the library, I hear the library card song. When I think about Christmas, I think of your wonderful, your full-length Christmas special. It's never really left me. So what are some moments within the 25 years of either episodes or just working on it that have never left you?
A silly moment comes to mind right away. It was that episode, I think it was called DW Copycat, where she dresses like Arthur and mimics him and drives him crazy. And it's so like young kids doing something like that. That comes to mind immediately. And then of all the letters that come to me from kids, I just got one from this young woman who was in the hospital, and she has written me this long letter that it was so emotional. I had to stop reading it, and I'm going to look for a time that's clear where I don't have any interruptions to read it all and respond to her. But one comes to mind was a child on the day 9/11 happened, a child who was going to school in the morning in the school bus and saw these planes drive in to the World Trade Center.
Yeah.
And this chaos that erupted. And he had his Arthur doll with him. And he wrote me this letter as a young adult explaining how comforting that was to him because of this world that Arthur represented and was encapsulated in that little Arthur stuffed animal, and how comforting it was to him. That just popped into my head when you asked me the question. They're just so many things. I keep drawers full of letters from kids and adults. And when the show ended, I was trying to think of a way to celebrate what we had done together as a team. And a book came to mind immediately because I think of myself first as an illustrator, then an author, then a television producer. And I compiled a lot of favorite shows, moments in favorite shows, and I wanted to share what it was like to make the books, to make the shows, and what goes into that. And it became this book that was a fun way to celebrate that, called Believe in Yourself.
It's such a wonderful book, and it's such a treat for us fans, because there's never really been a book about the show. I mean, of course, there have been chapter books based on episodes, but this was such a treat for all of us.
Oh, thank you.
One of my favorites.
Really fun to do, and to go back and illustrate scenes from the show that I could redo in my own, you know, language as an artist. That was one of the hardest things for me when the books started to become television programs, sharing my characters with other people.
Yeah,
and they would draw, you know, beautifully, but it wasn't quite the way I would do it. And early on, I remember a night up in Montreal, and Carol and I were up there helping to get the whole team, animation team, in gear. And, you know, we had meetings where they would ask me, well, how does Arthur walk? So I would have to get up from the conference table and walk around the conference table as Arthur. And they did all their drawings for the animation. And then they asked me to blue line them, where I would go over their drawings with a blue pencil to change proportions of a head or whatever. And I was doing that all day. And everyone went out to dinner. And I said, I'm going to stay here and work. And you know, it was getting late, and I was still blue lining these drawings that other artists had done. And I just stopped, and I realized this is an amazing adventure that's about to happen. I didn't, of course, understand how amazing the adventure would be, but just the fact that my books are going to move, and these stories are going to have a voice. It was incredible to me. And here you are, you're working with all of these talented people. It's a team.
Yeah, it is.
You're just a part of the team now. This isn't all about you. And so that was a big learning lesson for me, and one that I am grateful that I experienced. And I brought it with me to Hop, and I came into this new adventure understanding that a team is an opportunity, and to watch us understand these characters that we're building and this world that we're building together, and everyone has something to contribute. And that's what makes it wonderful and rich and exciting. And so Arthur taught me a big lesson there that night.
You know, I was going to ask you later on in the conversation, what did Arthur teach you about yourself and your work? But kind of alluded to it there.
Well, he taught me how important being a good friend is, how important being a good listener is. He taught me the importance of teamwork and sharing, and how helping others can make a difference in the world. I guess, you know, the perspective of talking, understanding other people's points of view and differences, and how differences can be good things, and how similar we all are with our differences.
Yeah.
I think apologizing and forgiving others is something that he taught me, as well as just appreciating what it's like to be a part of a community.
When you started the television show, it was 2 years before we got to see it, because animation time and
that's where I am now with Hop. It's like 2 years before anyone sees what you're doing.
So when you finally got to see it, do you remember the first time you saw the first show?
Well, I was seeing it in progress, so it wasn't.
But like, all together,
you saw, you know, the episode as it all coming together. But I don't have that luxury, which must be wonderful to see it, the finished product like that.
Yeah,
I'm still correcting things in storyboard form or early animation form or the script.
So what's the difference between your schedule on Arthur versus Hop? Because it's a different beast.
Yeah, it is definitely. And a different time. It's a harder time right now to get a children's program on television. I don't understand quite.
Yeah, this one took a while.
Well, like I said earlier, with Hop, it's a much more intense experience because I'm involved at every level. I think, you know, I learned a lot from Arthur, so I could bring something to the table about voice direction, for example, and listening to actors deliver a line and seeing in my head that line with the pictures and the movement of what was happening in the story, and kind of coaching them along with our wonderful voice director for Hop. Susan Hart is a genius. We had a few really good voice directors to choose from, and we had, you know, that was another part of Hop, was being in the position to approve everyone who was coming together in this show. I mean, Carol did most of that for Arthur, and I was.
You guys had Deb Toffin as voice director.
Deb, who was wonderful. But what is so amazing about Susan Hart with Hop is that we have what's called a read-through. When the script is finished and before we start to record the voices with the actors, she will go through the script and she will do every character's voice like the character.
Yeah.
And just, you know, bam, 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 just so it's seamless. And it not only is it amazing to experience, but it gives us the ability to really see that character and how it fits into the story so we can make changes if we need to. So hats off to Susan.
And we definitely can't wait to see it when it comes out, because it's going to be quite the show, because it sounds like something that I wish I would have had as a kid.
Yeah. That's the motivation for Hop. It's like to reflect kids that aren't reflected enough in our media, and to, you know, share this with other kids to make them a little more compassionate about experiencing and celebrating our differences and understanding one another. So I'm really happy that we have this opportunity, and you know, this major television network has come behind us to support us and really is excited about it being part of them and what they're doing for kids right now. I was really struck when we started Hop with was then HBO and now Max, how closely their agenda for us constructing this world was to what I was used to with Arthur at PBS.
Yeah.
No, the bar was so high at PBS. I loved that. It really, it brought me into telling stories this way.
Did it put you at ease knowing that you guys aligned?
I didn't know what to expect. I just knew when we were pitching the show to, you know, all of the major networks, it was our first pitch. And the people at HBO then just got it. It was like this immediate love fest. And after that, you know, I really couldn't engage on the same level with these pitches. And fortunately, HBO came back and they wanted to do the show. And remember not so long ago, I think it was it last summer or spring, when they were cutting all of these shows?
I was worried for you guys.
It was scary.
I was worried.
Yeah, I called them the evil bean counters. And, you know, it was all about the bottom line. And they got rid of hundreds of shows that were successful, some of them in the works. And we actually, how did they put it again? They were still committed to making the show, but we weren't guaranteed that it was going to air, which was very, very unusual during that process. And last summer, they came back, and the people who loved it from the beginning were this internal force that made Hop happen. So I'm really grateful to them.
Yeah, I will never forget. I guess it was right when the pandemic hit. I was talking to Peter one day. We were catching up, and he was like, there's going to be a show that we're doing of a disability. I can't say what.
Yeah.
But you're going to love it. And just hearing that was so, like, reaffirming and just reassuring. It was so good. Just knowing that was happening.
Yeah.
Because, like, we don't see us on TV.
There are a lot of kids that you can relate to who are struggling with various disabilities, and this is going to validate.
I mean, it's like, I'm, you know, in my late 20s, but it's like, if I had that as a kid, I could see something similar to myself.
I'm excited to get letters from kids like you and, you know, what this means to them. And also kids that are learning about other kids.
Oh, yeah.
With disabilities. They tested, HBO did this very intense testing with parents and kids before the show happened, you know, just to see where it fell in the world out there. And there were parents who were talking about how excited they were because they had kids with different challenges, and how it validated what they were going through as parents as well as their kids. So that was really good to hear.
So I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I'm just curious.
But you are.
I am anyway. I don't mean to put you on the spot, but do you have any questions for me about my life or what I do or my work? Because we're just meeting for the first time.
When you said you were in a wheelchair, I just wondered when that happened in your life.
It was, you know, it's been since birth. I have cerebral palsy. And in my early years of schooling, I went to a school just for children with disabilities. And
what kinds of disabilities did they have?
Just like mental, like either neurological or like just varying degrees of cerebral palsy. There are different types of it. Some were nonverbal. So when I finally got to public school, it was this big cultural shock because for the longest time, kids with disabilities were all that I knew aside from my immediate family, you know? So yeah. I just had to learn how to navigate through the world and have entertainment and the arts and books and everything else to thank for that, because all that stuff informed me getting through the world and what I do now. So
when did you transition from this school that was special and into a public school?
When I was 6 years old. And what's interesting, it was right when 9/11 happened. And not to be too morbid, but we're here. The school nurse's husband died in the towers. I live like an hour away from the city, so I had to grow up really fast when you see something like that happen.
Yeah.
So that's why that letter you discussed earlier really struck a chord with me, because moments like that, we needed Arthur and his friends to get through things, which is really great, because later in that season, you guys kind of, you know, covered it indirectly with the fire in the school and Binky being afraid of it, that whole storyline. But when did you realize that the show was striking a chord with people and people weren't just watching it?
The amount of books that were being consumed just jumped tremendously by millions in a year because of the show, and that we were reaching kids through the books as well as the television show. I found that really interesting. And I really liked the support of teachers and librarians understanding the value of what we were doing with the shows. And PBS helped that along too, because they developed curriculum that, you know, curricula that teachers could use and build certain shows as a lesson. I think the most valuable one that I heard from many teachers was Arthur Writes a Story.
That's my favorite book.
Is it? Yeah, it's one of my favorites too.
That's my go-to.
And teachers struggle with teaching story writing. Many teachers do. And that book helped them out a lot.
Now, was that the first book after the series came out?
It was pretty close to one of the first seasons.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah. But that was an important book for me because it was the first episode I really gravitated towards too, sort of see it in book form. Yeah. But yeah, I got to tell you, it was really cool because one of my other interests as a kid, so it was Arthur and it was Backstreet Boys. And when they came together,
oh yeah,
my mind was blown. So
oh
How did that come about?
It was so much fun. I got to go with Carol out to LA, where we've worked with the Backstreet Boys on that episode. And it was like this other world I was entering. Like, they had to have, like, I forget how many cereals it was, you know, in the morning when we started working at the breakfast table. But I came away, I liked their music a lot before I got to work with them. But they are such perfectionists. They would be working and reworking every one of those songs and trying different things. And all of them were very creative and had things to bring to the table about how to make a certain passage in a song stronger. So I came away from that experience with great appreciation for them.
That was such a crossover for me, because it was like, who would have thought that the Backstreet Boys would be on Arthur? It was so great.
Did you hear their version of the Arthur theme song?
I loved it.
Yeah.
And I want them to release it somewhere so we can have it.
I know. I wish they would too. We should. But then you get into this world of legal things.
Yeah.
Horrible, Bob.
Well, if we manifest it, you know.
Yeah. But you know who else did an amazing version of the Arthur theme song? Was Chance the Rapper.
Chance the Rapper. Yeah. That was so like,
it's so dreamy.
It's so like ethereal. Like, I latched onto that so fast because I had to do a double take. I'm like, the Arthur theme song? Him? Yeah. Really?
I know. It was like, you know, we're working on a project that I really hope happens with John Legend and maybe an Arthur movie.
Oh, I'm going to be right on that.
Oh, this could be really exciting. The concept and the very talented people. I can't talk about too much, but there is an Emmy-nominated writer doing the script, and someone who should have won, not Emmy, but Oscar-nominated, a young person doing the script, and someone who's worked on some really important animated films.
That's awesome.
Director, and it's going to be great if we can make it happen. But it's a rough time right now, oddly enough, for these big studios.
Oh, trust me. I know.
Yeah, I know. It's so, timing is everything.
Because I'm dealing with it too. Like, when the strike happened, seven interviews just got out. So I couldn't talk to anybody that I wanted to talk. It was so you got to make do with what you have. I know that's not the biggest world problem, but for me, it was like, what do you do now? You pivot. Yeah,
really?
You pivot. So before we wrap up, I'd like to share a story with you. Okay. I started this podcast 14 years ago almost.
Wow.
When I was 15 years old.
Oh my gosh.
I was doing 4 hours a day, 5 days a week, live broadcasting. With a disability, I was pushing all the buttons, making all the technical, I was my own engineer.
Wow.
And one of the things I did at the start of this show was I wrote a list of people that I wanted on this show. And you were number one.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Well, that is quite an honor. I have to take a minute to absorb that.
This is 14 years in the making. So I hope that we could keep in touch, because this has been so great. And I need you to know that you taught me how to be a better person and accept others and just have a love of reading, which I know was the kind of goal to bring Arthur to TV and the books as a whole, of course. But Arthur is such a big part of my life, so it is such a thrill to just sit down with you and talk.
I enjoyed this tremendously, and I do hope we get a chance to do it again. Maybe we could have a party when Hop comes out with Peter and you and I, and maybe Tolan and any of the other people who'd like to join us. Some of the actors. Oh, there's some really fun young people working on this show, voicing.
So is there any chance, are you doing any like signings or anything recent? I would love to meet you.
So yeah, when the first Hop book comes out, I just delivered the art for it to Scholastic a few weeks ago, and that will come out, I think it's like fall of 2024. So that's the next book I have in the works that I know of.
Yeah. I loved Why Did the Monster Cross the Road? I think that was such a good book.
Oh, he's so much fun to work with. We met.
I would love to talk to him too at some point because
he's just such a funny guy. And we met going to Russia together. Laura Bush invited us to represent America at the first Children's Book Festival, and we got to fly on Air Force One and spend a few days over in Moscow, which was very interesting. And then we just became friends because of that experience, and we've now worked on a few books together.
I've loved all both of your work because it's so meaningful for us to have different stories told to us. And I'm writing a novel now too. I'm writing a young adult novel that I've been playing with for over 10 years now. So I'm kind of in that stage too, where it's like, how do you get published? How do you, you know?
Yeah. When I started out,
it's such a different world.
It is. Editors had people on staff who read these unsolicited manuscripts, and they would find treasures. I don't know. So many. I think of all the wonderful books that never make it to the editor's desk where he or she can read it and make a decision.
Where can people stay connected with you?
I decided not to be on Facebook anymore a couple of years ago. I am on Instagram. And for me, as an illustrator, it's a fun way to share visual things with people. So I enjoy that. And it's Mark Brown 333, if people want to dive in.
What I love is that you post all your letters.
I share a lot of kids' art. That was my favorite part of doing the book for the 25th anniversary. You open the book and the end papers are all children's drawings that were sent to me over the past 25 years. So because I save almost all of them that I get, I have drawers and drawers full of, I love kids' art.
So one final hard-hitting, I don't know if it's hard-hitting, but what does GBH mean to you? Because they believed in you and Carol. What does that whole team mean to you?
Well, they enriched my life in such a major way. To see something in these books that I loved and I was doing, and to give me an opportunity to see those books come to life, and to reach millions and millions of more kids and families than I could through books, it was an incredible gift. And to learn from them, to learn about, and I thank Carol for teaching me how to build a story in animation and make it connect with children. She's so good at that. And she was such a wonderful teacher. So Carol's just, I couldn't ask for a better
teacher. I love her so much.
Yeah, she's just a terrific person.
Yeah, she worked on another show with people. Then she worked on a brilliant show called Between the Lions that was pretty.
Oh, yes, right.
And I love Chris Scherf and everybody over there.
I know. Chris, he had such a good idea with that show.
And he is such, he's another person that has really believed in what I've been doing and just a dear, dear friend. I said, everybody in children's television or the children's landscape, the people that I met, yeah, they don't have an ego.
Yeah.
They leave their ego at the door.
Yeah.
Because they know what their purpose is.
Yeah.
And, you know,
that's a really great observation, Bob. Really great.
But yeah, because all you're doing, all you're trying to do is just enrich us and give us the tools we need to, pardon the pun, believe in ourselves. And this conversation has been so wonderful, and I hope that we could do it again soon, and definitely keep in touch, because this has been great.
This was great. Great questions. And it was real. I'm going to end our talk today with the last sentence in a book I just finished about Hop. It's called Hop Helps Out. And the character that they're helping in this story, Helga, who's a little troll, says to Hop, "The world is filled with so many good things." And it is.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for hanging out with us at the DJ Bob Show. If you liked this episode, drop us a line at djbobrunkel@gmail.com. That's DJ Bob, RUNKEL @gmail.com. Let us know what you liked most about this episode and what other guests we should have on the DJ Bob Show. Thanks so much again for hanging out with us. This is Nate Beagle, your humble announcer.